You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, I speak to the double-headed dream team of David Shapiro from Sasson Securities and Viv Govender from Rand Swiss, both in Johannesburg. Now, Viv, I did something today, which I often do. I went onto my little laptop here, my Dell, and I ordered a book. And it's a recipe book. It's one of those recipe books I like because it's only got 10 ingredients, but it's got 100 recipes, and it's all vegetables, and by a chap called Theo Randall, who I find quite excellent. But anyway, the point is that I pressed a couple of buttons, and immediately my credit card was debited. I don't have to put in any details because they've got my details, which sounds a bit dangerous, but anyway, and it said it'll be there around about midday on Monday the 8th. So I thought, that's fantastic. Now, the reason for this story is, although it's not as high-tech as some of the companies you're involved with at the moment, it was started 30 years ago tomorrow in a garage, I think in the D.C. area, the Washington, D.C. area of the United States, by a gentleman that you may know called Jeff Bezos. And it's now worth $2.1 trillion, Viv. This is a modern-day a story that astounds me. It still astounds me. I know you're an AI man, but still, Amazon's an incredible story.
And Amazon's in AI as well. Remember, they have the investment in a company called Anthropic. Anthropic was built by people that left OpenAI, and Amazon is the big investor there. So Amazon is definitely in AI, and it's in AI as in robotics as well, with their stuff in their warehouses. None of these big companies, I mean, Apple is probably the one company that's lagging the most, but even they have the Apple AI or Apple intelligence thing that they have going on. But yeah, Amazon is one of those things. And there's a guy I follow, what's his name? Damarandan, you know? He's a valuator. And he basically says how he describes Amazon is it's not a particular kind of company, it's a disruptive type of company. It's a disruptor. Basically, all you know is that you don't know if it'll go into your business and be successful. All you know is that if it goes into your business, your valuation is falling. You just got to, if you're in a business, you just got to pray. It's called Aswad Damarandan. And he's got the best book, the little book of valuations, one of the best things you could ever read if you're interested in the markets. And he says, every business person should wake up every morning and just praying that Amazon does not decide to come and destroy their sector that day.
Viv, at one of the Buffett meetings that I attended to, I'm trying to think when it was, he spoke there, and he was brilliant. What he did is he just tore into value investors, and he tore into the way that they look at companies. You know, which is very historical, very narrow-minded, very insular, and gave us a whole talk on about, you know, valuation of companies and that. He's remarkable. I try to read whatever he gets out at the moment and that, but he's certainly a person, you know, well worth following. I think I thought he came from Sri Lanka, but he's Indian apparently. I had this argument with someone, but he's at one of the New York universities, but superb.
I think it is. Stunts Global Business. Yeah. But he's one of those guys that is, I'm not joking. Whenever we have a new person turning up at Rand Swiss, I usually get them to buy the book, a little book of valuations, because it's such an interesting way to look at markets and to understand how you value a share. It's lovely. But anyway, he did mention that Amazon is the great disruptor. Mm. It's not any particular business that it's great at, but it's just that it has as he calls it, an army of like 600 plus million people, which are its prime subscribers. Yeah. And that army can be turned to destroy any fortress that you may have as a business.
I'll give you some, on the ground, reflections of Amazon. What I mean by that is that when I'm in New York, I'm on probably the Upper West Side, 62nd Street, and that from then on, it's all, residents, you know, and what's happened is that all the businesses in that area have closed down, you know, all those, for example, mainly chain stores or branches of very well-known brands have all gone. You know, there's huge amount of retail space. And the reason why is because of the disruption of Amazon.
What about Barnes and Noble, David? Sorry to interrupt you, because the one thing has it gone?
They you can go to Barnes and Noble now, and there's another one I'm trying to think called Shakespeare. They're the odd bookstores, but you know those bookstores are for people who are what I would call old type beatniks. You know, you remember the beatniks? They predated hippies, and you know they would go and sit there with their beatnik type look and read books on a park bench, or and they sit there and have coffee in these stores. So it's become more of an attraction rather than a bookstore. You know, people have glanced through books and that. There still is, you know, so, but things have changed dramatically. A lot of retail space has given way, and these they drive into Manhattan and they park, and all these little ants come out and start to deliver these parcels, you know, but you can't believe the armies of people delivering the whole day. When I go into the lobby of the place where I stay, at the flat, there are piles of Amazon boxes out there. And in fact, they've had to introduce a scanning system, you know, because before a parcel would come, they'd phone you up and say, Mr. Shapiro, there's a parcel downstairs, you know, in the accident, whatever it is. Now you get an automatic because there's just too many to handle. So that's the disruption that it's brought to kind of everyday life.
Well, it's an interesting story because you remember that film with Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks called You've Got Mail, I think it was. And it was to do with Meg Ryan having a little independent bookshop and Tom Hanks putting a huge, great, giant sort of mega warehouse bookshop on the corner and driving her out of business. So in a way, that was a sort of a metaphor for what's happened now with Amazon. Viv, do you buy books at a bookshop? Do you sit on a park bench drinking coffee? Or are you an online man like the rest of us?
I'm a secondhand bookshop kind of guy. I like that. I'm not joking. I just love going to secondhand bookshops and basically.
They smell though, Viv. They smell of old books.
As an old school reader, I like the way old books smell. Quite frankly, I just love going to like you know. Old bookshop, and I have a thing for like old school science fiction stuff, like Asimov and you know that kind of stuff back in Heinlein and whatnot. And I'll be buying that stuff, you know, every day. But yeah,
you Luddites, I use a Kindle. Okay.
So oh no, David, you don't, do you? Just you're a cheapskate. That's why my book today costs €31, and if I'd have got the Kindle version, it would have been €15 half price. But I can't do that. I'm tactile like Viv. I've got a book right in front of me now in my hand, Van Gogh, A Power Seething by Julian Bell, and I turn the pages and I look at it. And I can't do that on Kindle, David. That's very cold. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you can lie in the bath. And don't worry, and it's very easy to read.
I don't have a bath.
Soak in hot water.
No, but the thing with reading it in the Kindle is you can't go back like something you saw a few pages ago as easily.
Yes.
You know, you see something and you want to go back and see something you saw before or make a notation. It's so much easier when you're reading something for information to read on a book. I can read like you know, articles and stuff, but I think when I want to learn something, I want a book.
I'm with you. Viv and I are ganging up on you, David. Sorry about that. But the Amazon story, obviously they've diversified from selling books to selling everything and going into space, which I'm sorry, I'm still skeptical about. But the point is, it's an incredible story. From an investment perspective, David, do you own it? Would you like to own it? Will you ever own it?
You own it. And how? Mm. Oh, and you know what? You know what the interesting story is? He never wavered from his strategy. And he just kept reinvesting.
Yes.
And people trashed him. His share price went nowhere for a long time. You know, and that's where I give him credit. He didn't budge, and he knew where he was going and putting more into these high tech ways of distributing goods, you know. So credit to him. You know, he also owns Whole Foods as well. And, you know, Whole Foods is organic food. It's
that's what they say anyway.
Mm. And I don't like this stuff. I honestly don't. But likewise as well, they've got chaps who ride on bicycles with a trailer behind and they deliver like What's it called? The checkers, you know, 60-60, whatever it is as well. Yeah. But I mean, Lindsay, what he started, and this is where I'm coming to, the e-commerce, you know, which he was behind, today is just a remarkable industry. And he was the original disruptor, sure.
And if you think about Jeff Bezos, right? You know, he's adopted. Bezos isn't his father. It's his stepfather, right? His stepfather was like a mechanical engineer. His mother was the daughter of some scientist or whatever. But she got pregnant when she was young with Jeff Bezos' father. You would never in a million years guess what Jeff Bezos' biological father was.
Go on.
A unicyclist.
Oh.
he was a unicyclist. He used to play. Pat was a unicycle polo or something. It only learned like later in life that Jeff Bezos was his son. Apparently, she married Bezos later on and changed his name and whatnot, right? But the amazing thing is that Jeff Bezos's father, biological father, was a unicyclist. You would obviously assume that had that not happened here, he would basically be not been raised by basically a mechanical engineer.
It is very strange the way that universe works, Viv, because I was watching an interview in the middle of the night on CNN about the Biden-Trump situation, which they're obsessed with, obviously, and so they should be. And there was this chap that said that everyone says that behind the scenes, Biden is this person, he's active-minded and everything, and he just had a bad night. And he used the phrase, he says, they're telling us that behind the scenes, he's riding a unicycle and juggling. And now you've mentioned a unicycle. And on that note, this is the last Independence Day before the US election, obviously. Mm. And David, it's very disturbing because all the New York Times, Washington Post, etc., have Trump with a 6-point lead, 49-43, which is disturbing me greatly. Over to you on this one.
There's a lot of discussion now about Kamala being the leading light there. In other words, that if there is going to be a contender, it's not going to go to some of the governors, but that she might step in. Mm. And her popularity is on the rise. This story is not over. You know, I don't believe the Biden story is over. I still think that behind the scenes, although there seems to be support for him, I don't think this is going to end. And I'm sure that in the background, a lot of moves are being made to replace him and to look for somebody else. So I'm watching carefully, but as things stand, and I think even if when I say they don't stand, I still think he's going to pip whoever does stand against him. I mean, I'm talking Trump. I still think Trump will come in. I just can't see it going the other way. It's just too late.
I want to point out a fact to you guys, right? There's been a couple of cases like this in the past. There was the Supreme Court Justice, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who stayed too long as well and died. And that caused the Supreme Court to flip. There was a senator called Dianne Feinstein who also had Alzheimer's and held on. And what we don't understand is that Biden is not just Joe Biden. Biden is a group of people. It's almost like Team Joe Biden. And if Joe Biden basically leaves, Team Biden also leaves. That includes all the people that have power around him. And so, from their point of view, it doesn't really matter if the Democrats win. They as a team are out. And that team includes his son, his wife, his sister, I believe. The guys that have been with him since the 1980s and 90s. And those guys, like the Obama team leaves, they get jobs in like whatever. They have a lot of influence because they are Joe Biden's people, you know what I mean? And so even if there's like maybe a 1 in 3 chance of winning, if Biden doesn't run, they don't win at all. You know, Hunter Biden does not have a play in the world if Joe Biden isn't there. And we have to consider
that
as well.
Very good point there. It's superb because people don't want to give up their power. And I think a lot of it is a reminder of politics here where people do not want to do not want to take a pragmatic route or even do what's best for the country and stick around simply because it's going to mean that they lose their they lose their power and they lose their job. Very good point.
My very good point is as follows. I took the trouble to write to the White House and said, listen, I'm very concerned about Mr. Biden, but because I think his speeches aren't hard-hitting enough. And my idea about a speech is you stand up there and you say, OK, everybody, and you're appealing now to the Trump voter, the simple person who has so-called deep-seated American values. You say, OK, let's say that your school is trying to elect a new principal, and one of the candidates is this fellow who's been proved to have lied 16,000 times over the last 4 years. He cheats on his wife. While she was pregnant, he cheated on her with an adult film star. No, let's not call her an adult film star. She's a porn star. He's a misogynist. He backs Putin, and he said Putin can do anything he wants because the Europeans haven't contributed enough to NATO. He said he fell in love with Kim, the North Korean dictator murderer. He's a convicted felon, etc. Would you put that person in charge of your children? Think of America as a school, and we are all the pupils of that school. And then maybe the base of Trump's support would say, you've made a very good point. David, you're saying yes in the background. But it's very simple. You've got a dodderer against a liar.
That negates all that. Let me tell you one fact that negates all that. The lifespan of a white person without a high school education, or just a high school, I think, without a college education in the U.S. during Obama's term fell. That's how bad it was for them in the middle America. During Obama's term, the average lifespan, the amount of time you live, right, went down if you were white and not educated in America. Hmm. Now, a lot of those deaths were what were called deaths of despair, which means like drug addiction, alcoholism, hmm, and so on. And so you have to consider just how bad the situation. These guys aren't like fighting for some kind of patriotic whatever. They see their lives like crumbling down. And they really don't care how bad they hurt the world. They're kind of like saying, you know, our lives are terrible, and you did this to me, and I want the guy that's going to fight you. So that is what you must keep in mind, is that the people that the Democrats and Republicans have switched over, and the Republicans have gotten all the working class people. They used to have all the upper business people in the past. And the working class people in the U.S., we always think the U.S. is rich. We always think the U.S. is, you know, so good and so on. It's harder to find a job. But the one thing is, like, do you know how rare it is to find a population in the developed world who had a declining lifespan, over the last, say, 10, 15, 20 years or whatever it may be? It's this is the population that had it happen. And these are the guys that the fentanyl come in, and these are the guys that are, you know, unable to afford groceries, because the real inflation rate is, like, you know, like Larry Summers says, probably 19% if you just used without substitutions and just use the same products year on year. And you do find these are the guys that can't afford to buy a house, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what's hurting right now. And these guys don't care about, like I said, ethics or whatever. They could think everyone is, corrupt. But this is the guy that's saying SU to the guys that we think are causing our problems. And that is what it is. I honestly don't think these guys believe that Trump is.
So there's several different societies, in other words, in the United States, whether it could be CPI, there's a CPI basket, and there's a real basket of people in Idaho or wherever it is. That's what you're saying. And David, do you agree with this?
No, I think Viv is right. I think those, you know, Lindsay, you've traveled. It's only when you travel and you go into mid-America do you get a grip on people like this. I must say, I've always hung around Boston and New York, and occasionally, even when I went down to South Carolina, which I've been to, and Georgia, it's a different America. You have absolutely no idea who you're talking to. These are real rednecks and wealthy. And then you go to something like Omaha, you know, and you think people, you know, you think people don't sit on bar stools there with their bum showing through the jeans, you know? You know that kind of, you know that caricature. Yes. It's real. And I could not believe going to Omaha, seeing them sell these cowboy boots, proper cowboy boots, and that people walk around with these cowboy boots and hats, you know, those big hats. I thought this was just in the comics or in movies and that, but that, Lindsay, you know, that's who you're dealing with. You know, it's a completely different, not mindset, but culture.
Yes.
So they're not going to warm to LGBT and things like that. You know, these are real men, you know, who throw lassos over bulls on the run.
It's a very colourful image you've just conjured up there, David. I like cowboy hats. Just for the record, I'd like to have a cowboy hat like JR, but the cowboy boots, I can get over it. Gentlemen, David, you've got to go in a couple of minutes, so I'm going to ask you.
I forgot about that.
I know you did, exactly, because you're having such fun, as we always do. David, give us the closing JSE indices, please, on this Independence Day, so it must be quite quiet.
What? It very quiet. I'll just give you the volume traded at the moment was less than 10 billion. You know, we've had some strong days.
Blimey.
We just got over 9 billion and mainly Naspers process and a couple of banks. So understand that there was very little trade. Remember, they were voting in the UK as well.
Mm.
So the all share index, another good day. So we're now at a record high, up 0.47 at 8155. Gains right across the board. The resource index up just under 1%. No major standouts there. And banks up 0.3%. Financials up 0.27% as a whole. Industrial up 0.17%. So, you know, steady gains in that. But at least we're up. I think tomorrow is another full day. We're going to have US come back to the market. And also, of course, some outcome. I don't know if there's anything that you've heard, Lindsay. I haven't had the TV on because I've had no electricity. So I'm not sure.
There's nothing new. David, you go off on to your other media commitment. Thank you very much for joining us. David Shapiro is from Sasim Securities. Viv Govender will stay with me for another minute because, Viv, I want you to talk about your AI fund, which I do like to hear about every couple of weeks. It must be going quite well.
Oh, yeah, it's been quite well. We've had double-digit gains in the last couple of months. Tesla has come back quite nicely. The big players like Microsoft are doing quite well. And just on Microsoft, I want to mention the fact that Steve Ballmer is now worth more than Bill Gates. He's number two. Gosh. And this is a total injustice because Steve Ballmer, while he was in charge of Microsoft, the CEO, did nothing for that company. All he has done ever since then is just basically hold on to his Microsoft shares. And his successor, Satya Nadella, has pushed the share price up over 5 times since he's taken over. And he's been basically in charge for, I think, slightly less time than Steve Ballmer was in charge. And, you know, like I said, multiples higher, but Steve Ballmer did nothing in that entire time. And Steve Ballmer, by holding these shares, has benefited massively and is now overtaken his former boss, Bill Gates, as the one of the richest men in the world.
That's the most extraordinary story. But anyway, you're a shrewd investor. And Viv, the final point here, and this is to do with the psychology of the individual and the psychology of the markets. When do you say to yourself, okay, this is enough now. I've made 20% in the last 2 months or 3 months, whatever it is. And now this is becoming a little bit silly. So I must trim some of my holdings. When does that mindset come into play?
And that exactly feeds into the Steve Ballmer, Bill Gates story. Bill Gates thought that. And that's why he's not one of the richest guys in the world. He's now been overtaken by Steve Ballmer. He's still one of the richest men in the world. You know, he's worth of a couple hundred, worth of 100 million, you know, 100 billion, sorry, rather. So he's still very rich. But he did have that thought that, you know, this has run a lot. Let me diversify. Let me just buy the market overall. When we have technology and we have runs going on, understand that, you know, these things can go on for longer than you think. As an example, until very recently, we didn't have a single company in the world worth more than $1 trillion. You know, a few years ago, we had a company worth more than $1 trillion, right? It's taken NVIDIA about 6 months to add $1 trillion to its value. The last 6 months to add $1 trillion to its value. Mm-hmm. And it was just a few years ago, there was a single company entirely worth $1 trillion. When you have technology, you know, working, you can have these fortunes created that are larger than you think. And then trying to bet against it is always, or, you know, the wrong way. And the only way you make the huge fortune, the huge, you know, gains, is by buying and holding on to your winners. And selling your losers.
Cutting your losers.
And that's unfortunately the way
well, exactly.
Yeah.
And we were speaking about Amazon earlier on with David. If you'd have bought Amazon whenever it was, it's a 30-year-old company now. If you'd have bought it 30 years ago, and after 10 years, you'd have said, goodness me, I've done so well. I've made a 783% or whatever. You'd look at it today and say, that was foolish. It's now worth $2.1 trillion. So, yes, stick with the winners. Cut the losers, and only when the market starts to turn do you say, okay, that's enough, trim my holdings. Viv, thank you very much as always. Viv Govender, Issam Rand Swiss, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.